Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Starting and operating a small business against all odds, living largely by your wits, you demonstrate more courage and devotion to a dream than any other non-military American in this century. We are back. It's 13 after the hour. Thank you very much for being with us today. Thank you for spending some time with us. 888-822-8255. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is our friend Rick Pinion. Let me tell you a little bit about Rick. He's the owner and the president of Pinion Financial Services, and he's also a branch manager for Walnut Street Securities. His organization designs and implements comprehensive financial plans, including investment programs, retirement planning, and insurance for individuals and businesses. He grew up in the Washington, D.C. area and received a master's degree in business administration from American University. He's a chartered financial consultant and a chartered life underwriter. And one of his claims to fame, which I can appreciate, is that he was the president of the Potomac Chamber of Commerce from 1990 to 1991. Rick, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Jim.
It's good to have you back with us, sir. And folks, what we're talking about is this hour, something we did this last, about a week or so ago, I think, and we're continuing our discussion with Rick about how to work with a financial planner, what financial planning is, period, just a definition of what it is. We're helping you to understand that and when you need to work with a financial planner, how to choose a financial planner, what financial planning, you know, what it can do for you, for your future, for your retirement, for your family, for your estate, all the different aspects of that. We're trying to flesh those out for you. Rick, one of the things that I'd like to talk about for just a minute is I know that you've been a financial planner for over 25 years.
Right.
And having worked with the financial planning industry in another life back in the 80s when I was in real estate syndication, travel around the world, I mean not around the world, but around the country, actually a little bit around the world, I got up into Canada some, working with financial planners and the products that they offer, if you've been a financial planner for 25 years, you're one of the pioneers.
That's true. I started in the early days.
That means that you're probably at least 105 years old, right?
And going on 106.
No, seriously, folks, the financial planning industry is, with 25 years experience, he's been around a while and has seen a lot of things. One of the things that's been interesting to me, Rick, and I have not followed it to the degree that you have, but over the last 25 years, you've seen a lot of different things happen, a lot of different focuses on financial planning, haven't you?
That's for sure. As a matter of fact, you know, if we look at the definition of financial planning, I think if you go to the basic ingredients, it generally involves evaluating and recommending strategies to help a person achieve their financial goals. But financial planning has to be both objective and comprehensive. And one of the things that I've witnessed, the changes that I've seen in the industry, is that financial planning is an interdisciplinary approach. So lately, we've had other professionals also move into the area of financial planning. I think I mentioned last time, both CPAs and attorneys are now going back to school and taking specialized courses to offer financial planning.
Right. Banks also.
That's for sure.
Yeah, banks have, most banks have somebody on staff who is a financial planner, helping people with that sort of thing. But one of the things that I was going to say about the trends that have happened over the last several years, you know, back in the late 70s, or I guess maybe a lot of the 70s and most of the, a little over the half of the 80s, a lot of financial planning was focused around tax avoidance, wasn't it?
That's true. And, Jim, you probably have seen this in your travels. But I think originally the financial planning industry was focused on tax savings when tax rates were very high.
That's right.
And so as a result of it, a lot of people, the basic financial plans is how can we reduce your income tax rates? And you can probably remember this, Jim, back when they were very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's less of an emphasis on this and more on other areas of financial planning.
Well, back in the period that I'm talking about, interest rates were as high as 70%.
That's true.
You could have a 70% marginal rate back in like 80, 79, 80, 81, something like that. But I do think that I like the trend. Even though I actually had products available, we developed products in the real estate business that I was in that were tax programs that offered tax benefits. I do think it's a good thing that more of our focus in this country is on equity and income, and rather than tax issues.
That's right. In fact, a lot of the early real estate limited partnerships didn't make sense so much from an economic point of view, but more from a tax avoidance.
Right. Economics is the key, and I really think that one of the dividends that we have accumulated in the prosperity that we're experiencing right now is a result of focusing more on economics and less on tax issues in our investment strategies.
Yeah, that's correct. Also, the other thing to remember too is there's roughly about 300,000 people that call themselves financial planners in this country, and I think the industry is moving more toward a standardization or more toward a regulatory approach to define exactly what a financial planner is. Generally, a financial planner has to have, in my opinion, has to have a designation, either a certified financial planner or a chartered financial consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they should be licensed in order to market the different products and services that they promote.
Right. Let's take a moment and define financial planning.
Okay. Well, I think financial planning revolves around a person trying to identify and crystallize their goals, what they want to achieve in life. And, of course, most people have limited resources, so they're trying to make those resources work both efficiently and effectively. And they want to coordinate these assets together, because sometimes what they do in one part of their life, for example, college planning costs, could also interface with either retirement or estate planning goals.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone needs the advice of a financial planner. Even the people that try to do it themselves, it doesn't hurt to have a once-over and just kind of review of what they've done to date.
That makes a good point. Do most financial planners work with people who are a little bit independent? I mean, if I came to you and said, "Look, Rick, I need a little bit of help, but I don't need all of your help. I think I'm a pretty smart guy. I want to dabble in my own things here, but I want you to help me with this one aspect." Do most financial planners, are they willing to do that?
Yeah, I think, Jim, no one has a corner on good ideas. And as I mentioned before, financial planning is an interdisciplinary approach, and it's hard to be an expert in all areas. So many times a person will go to a financial planner, and they've focused on investments, but they've left out things like having a will and worrying about other things in their lives.
Right. All right. Rick, stand by. We've got to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. We'll be right back. 888-822-8255. Give us a call if you have a question. And when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the things is, how much money do I have to justify having a financial planner? Stay with us. All right, we are back. It's 24 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate. Our friend Rick Pinion is with us. Rick is president of Pinion Financial Services. He's a certified financial planner, has been now for a long time, and is one of the pioneers of that industry. And we're talking about financial planning. And one of the things I want to ask Rick in just a few minutes is, how much money do you have to have to pick up the phone and call a financial planner and say, "I need your help"? But before we do that, Rick, Chuck tells me we have a caller. Who we got, Chuck?
We've got Ken in Washington, D.C.
Hi, Ken. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Jim.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I enjoy your show.
Thank you very much. Say hello to Rick Pinion.
Hi, Mr. Pinion.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm good. I heard your show last week, and it was very informative. And I had a question I was wondering if maybe you could help me with.
Go for it.
I'm a sole proprietor, and I don't have a lot of extra income coming in right now. But one of my biggest concerns is saving for my child's education. I was wondering how much money you think I need to put into something like that, and where it's the best places or best investments, you know, to save for something like this.
Well, that's a great question, Ken, and it comes up all the time in financial planning, because many people are concerned about, you know, their children's welfare and education, and it seems like the cost of college keeps going up and up and up. One of the, although there's many techniques, let me just focus on one that may be of help to you. Many people, when they save for college, they want to put it into something that's going to grow and keep up with inflation. And one of the best techniques that I know of is using a good quality mutual fund. It's both diversified, it gives you professional management, and if the children are very young, how old are your children now?
I just have one daughter. She's 2 years old.
2 years old.
It's not too early to start, though, Ken. I'm glad you're thinking about it.
Right.
Right. Many parents start when the child's just born.
Oh, okay.
But in answer to your question, if you put money into a mutual fund, in Washington, D.C. and most other states, there's a law called the Uniform Gift to Minors Act, which means that as the interest comes off of the mutual fund, the child can earn up to $1,400 a year before you have to declare taxes on it.
Okay.
Now, since your child's under 14, if the child earns over $1,400, it's taxed in the child's tax, in your tax bracket. After the child turns 14, then the child would fill out their own income tax form.
Okay, so you're saying the child can earn $1,400 a year in interest?
Right.
Okay.
Before it becomes a taxable event.
Okay.
Now, there's also another thing I mentioned during our last show, and if you remember, called an educational IRA.
Okay.
And that's the new kid on the block, and you can put up to $500 per year into that particular IRA. So that's another way to save for college.
$500 a year.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Which doesn't sound like a lot. But when you look at all the other avenues that are out there, like financial aid, gifts, qualified state tuition programs, there's the HOPE scholarship that just came out. There's many, many avenues of saving for college. But the cornerstone should be a disciplined saving approach. And I would say if you could put aside $200 or $300 a month, you should be in good shape by the time she reaches college age.
Now, if I invest in some of these things you're recommending, when I have to take that money out and pay the tuition check, is that going to be taxable, or am I going to, you know, be able to take that money out tax-free?
Well, if you remember, most of the interest and dividends you've been paying taxes on throughout the years. However, there may be some capital gains when you start redeeming those shares because you've held on to them for many, many years.
Okay. Yeah, the internal appreciation of the stock, if you buy stock, that's not taxable as you go along until you actually collect that or sell those. Right, Rick?
Yeah, that's correct.
But the yield, if you get a dividend or interest, if it's a CD or whatever, the yield or the interest is what's taxable in, or not, or treated on your tax return in the year that it's earned.
Okay.
But if the stock doubles in price, the value of the stock doubles, then that doesn't become a taxable event until you divest yourself of that stock, right, Rick?
That's correct.
Now, but Rick, Ken's question is, if he buys this mutual fund that you were talking about, and you know 20 years later, not 20 years, but 16 years later, he cashes all that in, that the appreciation of that stock is taxable, right?
Yes, as capital gains.
In the capital gains rate.
Right. And if it's in the, obviously it's in the child's name in our custodial account, so the child's capital gain bracket will be 10% versus 20% if it was in Ken's name.
Some states can have programs where the state helps you. The state actually allows you to put some money into a fund, and then if you fund that account, they will provide you with tuition for your child when they get ready to go to college. I'm not sure whether Maryland or Virginia has that. Do you, you know about that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, several states.
Stand by. I'll tell you what, guys, stand by. Let's talk about that when we come back after this break. It's 29 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is Rick Pinion. Stay with us. All right, welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after the hour. 888-822-8255. That's our phone number. Our special guest is Rick Pinion. He is a financial planner. He's helping us to understand how to work with financial planners and how to do financial planning, the importance of it, how to work it, and how to make sure that you have a good financial plan. We have a caller whose name is Ken. Ken is asked a question about providing education, doing some saving and investing for his child's education. And Ken, are you still here?
Yes, I am.
Good. Thank you. Rick, tell Ken and my audience about the some of the state's solutions to providing tuition for people to go to college.
Right. This is very exciting, and there's been several articles that have been printed on this particular subject. We call them qualified state tuition programs. The state sets up a special program where parents can put funds into an account. In some states, you don't necessarily have to go to the state schools that are in that particular state, but you can actually go out of state.
Mm-hmm.
The things you want to look for is what sort of rate of return are you getting, and second of all, how much flexibility and freedom do you have just in case your child happens to get a scholarship?
Right.
Can you use that money for some other purpose? Now, the funds that accrue in these programs are not currently taxed to either the contributor or the child, which is a very good thing. However, if the person dies while they have one of these, the contributions are included in their estate for estate tax purposes.
One of the things that you were talking about, Rick, I think is very important. And Ken, I recommend that you check this out, because for what they typically will do is, and the actual way this thing works is, you can either make a lump sum payment of, you know, let's say $5,000 or $8,000 or something like that, or you can make payments. Typically, there's a period of, there's the ones that I have seen, Ken, one that I know about particularly was that there's a maximum of a five-year, or a minimum, I should say, of a five-year payout period, and you actually make monthly payments to that plan. And over a period of, say, 5 years, you would pay in maybe, say, $7,000 or $8,000, or maybe $10,000, whatever the program is. And what they would do for you is you would earn interest on that. But wherever your child wanted to go in that state to a state college, their tuition for 4 years for up to, I think it's up to, in one, ones that I know of, maybe 10 semesters, their tuition is paid for, and in some places some of the fees are paid for, and you can, as Rick said, you can take that to any state school in the state. But also, if your child goes to a school in the next state, they go over there, they actually register, and that state bills your state for that amount, and if the school they go to has a higher tuition than is allowed in your program, then you just pay the difference.
Okay, well, that sounds like some good advice. I'm going to have to look into that, and I'll be looking forward to hearing Mr. Pinion talk about, you know, how's the best way to choose a financial planner and what to look for.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate you calling in.
Okay.
See you later. Okay, Rick. Let's get back into one of the questions that I had for you was, if someone says, you know, I only have a little bit of money, I don't have a lot of money. You know, typically when somebody thinks of a financial planner, they think that, you know, you're going to expect them to have $100,000 or $50,000 or whatever. But that's not really the case, is it?
Yeah, that's true. I would say general philosophy is that hiring a financial planner presumes that you have discretionary income to invest. But that may not always be the situation. Some people need help with basic money management, where they need a financial planner to sit down and help them work out a budget, a cash flow statement, and a financial statement. And there's many financial planners that actually work with people that would like to save money but just have trouble coming up with the funds each month.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's all part of financial planning, isn't it? Is helping them be able to do financial planning.
That's true.
Yeah.
And, of course, everyone has to cover their basic living items, such as housing, insurance, or even a cash reserve fund for emergencies. But once they finish that basic rung of the ladder, then they're ready to move up to the next step and start investing.
If somebody came to a financial planner, called a financial planner, and said, look, you know, we want to invest, we want to do some financial planning, but right now we can't even pay our bills. We're having trouble paying our bills because we're not really good at managing our money. Do financial planners get into that sort of thing?
Yes, because, you know, these days it's so hard. Most people don't even know what their gross pay is. They know what their take-home pay is. So much mm-hmm. is taken out, you know, each pay period. And some people are not really doing anything wrong. They're just having trouble keeping up. That's the reason we've seen so many, you know, dual-income families these days.
Right.
And some people are caught in a squeeze between trying to care for their parents as well as their children. So what a financial planner would do is to sit down and say, okay, how much income is coming in? What are your expenses, both fixed and variable? And how much should we set aside for savings and investing? And of course, obviously, everybody has to look at things like liabilities. You know, how much are their credit card balances, installment accounts, things of that nature.
So a financial planner wouldn't just say, okay, call me when you've got some money to invest. They actually get more involved in... and maybe just some of the more day-to-day things of helping them with their family budget.
Right. The whole thing is like a puzzle, and you're trying to find out what's the best ingredients, what's the best mix that helps them become successful.
Right. All right, very good. Got to take a quick break, Chuck. I'm sorry, Chuck's the producer. You're Rick. Rick, stand by. We've got to take a quick break. It's 39 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Chuck is going to take us to a break. 888-822-825. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the most important things to ask when you interview a financial planner. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. It's 44 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Our special guest is Rick Pinion. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com, www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Rick, if someone wanted to contact you at your company, how would they do that?
Well, they can reach us several different ways. If they're in the Washington area, They can reach us at 301-652-4000.
Okay.
If they're outside of the Washington area and they need to reach us on our 800 number, it's 1-800-296-4427.
Okay.
And if they're in some other part of the globe and they want to reach us on email, it's A, like Apple, 1040, like the tax form, at Earls, Earls is E-R-O-L, like Larry, S, .com.
Okay. And if somebody wanted to call you and ask for your opinion on something, let's say they were in, Spokane, Washington or something, and they just need to ask you a question or something like that, want to email you a question or something, you'll be glad to help them, won't you, Rick?
Thanks.
And maybe recommend somebody in their area to deal with them?
Sure. The other thing I was going to mention, too, is I'll be happy to send them, we've made reports on different subjects in financial planning, like little checklists.
Right.
And we'll be happy to send those out. I think they're very educational and informative.
I appreciate that. And folks, he'll do that. Don't worry about whether he's going to try to close you to be a client or whatever. You know, obviously, that's the business he's in, and if he can help you and you guys can do business together, that's great. But basically, I know that he will be glad to help you if he can and pass you along to someone who can work with you in your marketplace if you need help with that. He'd be glad to do that. Speaking of which, Rick, I want to talk about finding a financial planner, how a small business person can find a financial planner. Obviously, they could pick up the Yellow Pages. But let's say they pick up the Yellow Pages and they're looking through for financial planners or whatever. What is that? How they would look in the Yellow Pages? Would they look for financial planning?
Right. No, it would come under several different areas. They could either look under financial planning consultants. They could look under the investment section of the Yellow Pages.
Right.
They might find under miscellaneous sections. For example, they might look under something like real estate and see financial planners in there. But that's more rare.
Right.
I think the best way, though, to find a financial planner is not so much through the Yellow Pages, but actually, Jim, is probably similar to your business. It's the word of mouth.
Right.
It's asking for referrals from your friends.
Right. Who do you use, John? You know, and or Mary or whatever. Ask your friends what, or maybe, you know, it's probably a good chance that they've already told you.
Right. And it's the act of goodwill based on that trust relationship that's
right.
The engine that drives the business.
Now, when you talk to them, ask them why they like their financial planner. What is it about their financial planner that they like and what did they not like? And that's the real everyday people kinds of things that they're going to give you. But there are some actual questions that you need to ask. And Rick, you sent me a checklist that was in Money Magazine's, this current issue of Money Magazine, out of an article that was written by Andrea Rock. There's a checklist of five things that I think is very good, and I think you do too. These are specific things that you should ask a financial planner, or you should know about your financial planner, about the one that you choose. Let's go through that list, Rick.
Sure. Well, let's take number one, which is obviously the credentialing process.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure that the person has both the educational credentials, like either a chartered financial consultant or a certified financial planner, also that they're licensed in the area, both through the state and also through the SEC or the NASD, so that they're able to be licensed and properly market these particular financial products.
Okay. Now, how do you get that information out of them? If they're in the Yellow Pages, or if you've got a card, or if you've got some information on them, they will have that designation behind CFP or whatever. They'll have that behind their name, or they should have it, shouldn't they?
Yeah, that's true. And most people are very proud to put it after their name.
Yes, exactly. Now, as far as licensing, how do you actually go about saying, are you licensed?
Well, there's several ways you could do it. I mean, obviously, you could ask them, but you can also call your local state. You could call the National Association of Security Dealers Regulation. You can reach them at 1-800-289-9999.
Okay.
They keep records of security brokers' regulatory violations that you can check.
Right.
Now,
that's a good idea to check behind. I mean, if they've got a license up on the wall, that's fine, but you can check behind them to find out if they've ever been disciplined, can't you?
Right.
See if they've ever had any kind of disciplinary action taken against them?
Right. And there's two common licenses. One is called a Series 7, which is called a registered representative, and this enables the person to actually trade stocks and bonds and,
right.
and certain closed-end mutual funds.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a Series 6. Now, many people who are in other disciplines get a Series 6, which enables them to do mutual funds and various types of equity-based products. The seven, of course, is the granddaddy. That means they can do most things that financial planners
just about everything.
To do.
Right. Yeah. Number two is make sure the advisor has at least 5 years of experience. Is that a good number? Is 5 years a good number?
I would think so. I would think as a minimum 5 years is necessary.
But what about the poor guy who's only been doing it for 2 years? He's got to eat too.
Well, he could team up with another financial planner to get that experience. There's many financial planners that start out in larger firms.
Right. Oh, I think it's a good idea. I mean, one of the best things to have if you're an investment advisor is gray hair.
Like an airplane pilot.
That's exactly right. All right, folks, it's 50 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll be right back with Rick Pinion. We're going to continue to go through this checklist of five things to ask the prospective financial planner that you're thinking about. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We are back. It's 54 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Rick Pinion is our special guest. Rick is president and the owner of Pinion Financial Services, and he's also a branch manager of Walnut Street Securities. Is that right, Rick?
That's correct.
And we're talking about financial planning, how to find a good financial planner. And next time Rick is back with us, we're going to talk more about some specific financial planning instruments, some different things, we're going to get into financial planning a little bit. But what we've been doing in the last show is just talking about the concept of financial planning and how to find a good financial planner. And I want to continue that, Rick, as we wrap up the hour. We were talking about number two in our list here of five things that you want to make sure you check on when you get a financial planner. And we were talking about the you need to. The list here says that the person needs to have at least 5 years' experience, and I think that's a good idea. It makes it tough on the people who haven't got 5 years' experience, but they're just going to have to work it out and get some gray hairs and some experience. Number three is confirm the advisor's regulatory record and financial disclosure forms. What does that mean?
Well, I think that everyone should investigate the planner's background in terms of the government agencies that regulate part of the financial planning process.
Okay.
For example, the Securities and Exchange Commission. So if a person oversees assets of $25 million or more, they have to register with the SEC. They have to fill out what they call an ADV, which is short for advisor.
Uh-huh.
And you can get information on that by calling the Securities and Exchange Commission in Washington. Also, the financial planner is required to give you a copy of that.
Okay.
So that you can look a little bit about their background and how they charge and what sort of things do they specialize in.
Does a financial planner still have to work with a broker, a financial planning broker? Can they be on their own without being a part of a brokerage?
Right. Many are sole proprietors that work on their own, and others are part of a large brokerage firm.
Uh-huh. Now, when I say brokerage, I don't necessarily mean one of the big wirehouses or anything like that. It could be a small company. I think you're associated with Walnut Street, right?
Right. Although I'm a branch manager for Walnut Street Security, and I'm what they call a registered principal.
Right.
The Pinion Financial Services is independent of Walnut Street.
Right. Okay. The fourth one is meet with at least three planners. I like that idea before you make a decision.
Right. Because you need to ask the planner, what's your typical client like? All planners these days are starting to have a tendency to specialize more and more. I guess it's like the old country doctor or the lawyer. These days, everything becoming so technical, people have a tendency to specialize.
Right. Well, I do think it's a good idea because, I mean, the chemistry might not be right with the first person. Even if you check all the technical things, you need to be able to like the person. I think it's important to get along with and like the person that you're dealing with.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're putting basically your life savings in this person's hands. You've got to trust this person.
And you're going to be with this person probably for a long time.
Sure. In fact, most financial planners, they review the plan periodically to make sure it stays in sync.
Right. Number five is follow up on client references. Now, I think this is an excellent idea.
Sure. Many people ask me to give them three or four references, and I try to pick people that are in the same line of work or the same situation in life that they are.
Right.
And some people actually call and ask very, very important questions.
Well, it's just like I tell people when they're hiring a new employee, if you should always ask for references and you should always call the references. And it's the same thing when you're hiring a financial planner, no question about it. Rick, thank you very much for being with us today. Once again, you've done a great job. We'll have you back again real soon, and we'll get more into some of the financial planning instruments that you recommend.
Great, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Rick. Have a good one.
Thank you, sir.
See you later. All right, folks, got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.